Joining me today on the Culture Catch, Pamela DeBar.
Together. Your new book.
Yeah, it's coming up. I'm almost finished writing it.
I'm with the band. A couple of new chapters in the book.
So. Yeah, there's an addition and some new photos, and Dave Navarro wrote me an intro.
Dave Navarro, now there's a rock guy.
Yeah, he is, totally. And, you know, he's been in two amazing bands, but now he's just doing whatever he wants, but he's already got that thing that now he is a rock god now, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's married, so he's off your list. And you're almost married, right?
Yes, I'm very, very attached, yeah.
Who is he? Is he a rock and roller by chance?
He is a musician. His name is Mike Stinson. He's a country singer-songwriter, hot band, just amazing. Dwight Yoakam recorded one of his songs. Put it
Shameless
on two records,
props,
actually.
I love it. You got a prop.
Hey,
two
yeah,
of Dwight's records, and Dwight is one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, yeah, I love Dwight so much.
So I'll probably like him. I mean,
oh,
just
yeah, I
right
think
out of
you
that.
Will like him.
Did you get him down to Nudie and suit it up?
Not yet. It's a little expensive, although there's no Nudie, of course.
I know.
But
you have
Manuel,
to go to Manuel's
in Nashville, and he's a little expensive right now.
Now, I have a funny Manuel story, speaking of Manuel. I was in Nashville, and I was making the rounds as a singer-songwriter because I'm a roots rocker.
Ah.
My friend Jim Lauderdale had hooked me up.
Oh, God, Jim.
You know Jim?
Very
isn't he great?
Well.
Yeah, he's one
he
of my
loves
good
Mike, by the way. They're
well, then
very,
that's all we need to
they
do.
They love each other's music.
Right.
Yeah.
So Jim said, you know, I want to introduce you to Manny Jr. Mm-hmm. I said, Manny Jr.? From Manuel's. I'm like, from like Nudie's Manuel's? He goes, yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, wow. So I go to the shop, and of course, I can't afford anything.
It's so expensive. Yeah, it's fun
but
to look.
I meet Manny, and I go, Manny, as a goof, where's Graham's outfit? He goes, dude, because I'm wearing his pants. I'm like, no, you're not.
Which were the submarines?
The submarine pants.
I know they have
those.
They
said, we can't find the jacket.
They can't
somebody
find
has
the jacket.
The jacket
they can't find it.
That famous jacket off of the Gilded Palace of Sin cover.
Well, the submarine pants are
oh,
different
no, that's
pants.
The submarine, international submarine band.
Yeah. They were submarines. It was a red suit with submarine pants, and he wore that to the opening of the Beatles movie. Yellow Submarine.
Oh,
that's the first night I saw him. I met him there that night.
Really?
And he had the submarine outfit on. Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Was this in London or L.A.? The submarine?
L.A.
The screening of it.
Yeah. It was a big premiere.
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
So
and all the GTOs arrived in... My girlfriend had a Hudson Hornet Sparky in the GTOs, and we painted it yellow and with portholes and the whole bit. Drove it 1947-8 Hudson Hornet.
Now, what people don't know is the GTOs were a band that Frank Zappa helped put together, or was it just a goof initially?
It wasn't a goof, no, but, you know, I would say we were more performance artists than a band, although we were singing, and we had amazing backups. With the Mothers backed us up. Lowell George co-produced Frank.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I didn't know Lowell.
And played on it, and, Jeff Beck played on it, and whoever was in town, we would just have them come down. Rod Stewart sings on a couple songs, yeah.
So it was a serious musical thing.
It was, but none of the girls could really sing.
Right.
Frank loved to capture a moment, so he thought we were just amazing girls just hanging out, dancing with all the bands, you know, half naked and whatever. He wanted to capture it. So he wanted to make sure that was in like a time capsule, you know, forever. So that's how that happened.
And who came up with the name Girls Together Outrageously in GTOs?
I think it was him. I really do. We were trying to figure out a name for the band, and I think we were all just sitting around, and I think it was him that came up with it.
Wow.
It's hard to remember because we were all throwing ideas, but I'm pretty sure it was Frank, yeah. We did like three shows.
Oh, three.
Yeah. We did the Shrine Auditorium, the Whiskey Go-Go, and a club called The Experience, which was a very short-lived club. But it was wild. And that night we had John Bonham on drums and Noel Redding on bass.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Super squad.
So whoever was there, you know, we just asked, hey, come play with us. You know, they didn't know the songs. It didn't matter, you know.
Yeah, I mean, with those guys, because they could play anything anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that must have been unbelievable.
It was a blast.
Experience.
It was always a blast, you know.
That's like the exclamation point to the rock and roll experience.
Yeah, I guess
having your idols play your music in your own project.
Well, I had Graham Parsons and Chris Hillman come to our show, first of all, at the Shrine. And they came backstage and wanted to get backstage with me. That was like it, you know. But they also came to the studio when we were recording and wanted to play. And Frank said, no, we don't need anything. And Graham said, I'll just play tambourine. And Frank said, no, thanks. And I was like, come on. Oh, my God. He didn't need tambourine in it, I guess. I don't know. But they came to visit the studio.
No. Romantically, who were you linked with at that time period?
Graham, Chris Hillman.
So Chris was your beau. And yeah. Graham walked in and you were like, uh-oh.
Oh, I loved them both. Well, yeah. They were together. They were in the Burritos together.
Right.
Yeah. And
and they were in the Birds before that.
Yes, they were in the Birds. Well, Chris took Graham out of the Birds with him and they formed the Burrito Brothers.
Right.
And Polly, his little daughter, I babysat her. I was her babysitter. Now she's my goddaughter. She has been ever since then. And you know, she just had a baby and I'm her also her godmother. Isn't that wonderful?
That's wonderful. The rock and roll family tree.
Yes.
Could you tell, I mean, you know, you said the other night, which I thought was the most telling statement, that really you lived through the Renaissance period of rock and roll. Mm-hmm. You really look, it's the apex of creativity, the sensitivity, the musicians, everything they were channeling about subculture and the counterculture.
Dylan.
But all, Dylan, I mean, like, I don't know, you go 64 to 74, was that kind of it?
Yeah, exactly,
those 10 years?
Exactly, and those, how about those 10 years? That's like literally being in Venice, or I don't know where did all that go on? The Renaissance of
Florence.
Florence. Okay,
so
yeah.
Like in Florence.
That's what it's like.
It's and like you have the Beatles
Florence
who started
1459 or whatever year that all that was going on.
Yeah, and you're right there in the middle of all of it.
Yeah.
Just you and you talk
just
in your book about how the Beatles kind of opened you up to the rock and roll phenomena. And
well, it was the King. Who started everything, of course, you know. He opened me up in a female way, you know. And I didn't know what it was yet.
Right.
But what is this, okay?
Goosebumps. But,
yeah,
and, nerve endings.
Yeah. and then the Beatles were just the right time. I was 14, so it was like, yeah, okay, I'm ready for this.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Elvis, And Elvis really was just co-opting the R&B thing that was really happening and making it mainstream for the wide audience.
Timing.
I mean, just timing is always
timing.
Crucial.
And, of course, he was Elvis.
Right.
He was sent from above, okay, to bring all that together.
Now, you met Elvis, right?
No.
No? You never met Elvis?
I had two opportunities.
Okay. Tell this is the story.
Two opportunities. Right. The first time I was with Jimmy and Robert, Led Zeppelin. They took me to see Elvis in Vegas, sat in the front row. This is when he was in the black leather. This was 69.
Wow. So he'd just done his comeback
special.
He was
so gorgeous, yeah. And Red West, I didn't know it was Red West at the time, but he came up after the show and said, would you guys like to come meet Elvis? And Jimmy said, no, thank you, very sweetly. I still haven't gotten over that.
That is not a good thing.
The second time, Larry Geller, who was his hairdresser and his spiritual advisor was a friend of ours, mine and my roommate Michelle, and he called and said, Elvis is looking for a girl to hang out with tonight and watch TV.
Watch TV.
Yeah. Well, he watched a lot of TV.
Practice a little karate on you. Shoot a gun or something.
But anyway, I had just met Michael DeVar, who I wound up marrying, and I was afraid I would be tempted by Elvis, so I said, no, thank you. That was another time. I do regret that, because I could have controlled myself.
Yeah, the first time, you know, you're in the company of Jimmy and Robert Plant, and what are you supposed to do? Well, maybe you could have put your foot down with those guys and like, guys, come on, he's an icon. Let's go.
I was still a devoted girlfriend, you know. I didn't, like, say, what, are you guys nuts? I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I should have.
People don't know. You were a serial monogamist.
Mm-hmm.
You were always
a
one-guy gal. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever people want to read between the lines, that wasn't it.
But I was. I was true blue to my guy. Still am. Always have been. That's my thing. I wanted love. I want to be in love, you know. I just wanted to be in love with someone who played music, someone who moved me in that way.
Yeah, what was it about music in general? Did you grow up in a musical family?
No.
Your parents didn't play great records when you were growing up? Nothing.
The radio was on, Dean Martin, you know, Sinatra.
Very safe.
I love Dean Martin. But I love Dean Martin. Dean Martin was sexy. Yeah. My uncle worked on his TV show. So when I was 12 or 13, I got to go to those tapings.
Oh, classic.
And to see Dino in the flesh, I think that may have started everything. Right. I mean, I was like, wow. It's like he lives, he breathes, and there he is right there. Oh, my God, I could reach out and touch him. And I got a signed picture. So that was very early on.
Good for you. I love those early... They were the early rock and rollers, right? They had the style, the suave moves, Frank.
How about how that music holds up? Mm. It's always going to hold up. And that is some music, isn't it?
Who's the most romantic rocker you were involved with?
Besides my husband. Besides Michael, who proposed to me the day we met. It was Jimmy Page. He was always the most romantic. He made you believe every word, man. He said, you know, you're going to be in my bedroom in Pangburn. We'll watch the peacocks walk by the window. And he would just, and you could just, you were just there, right? Of course, I never got to Pangburn, but it was very romantic at the time.
Yeah, and everyone talked about his dark, sinister side. And, you know, you paint a much gentler kind, or maybe it's you, also your influence.
Well, exactly. Takes two to merge.
Right.
And he never he did have his whips on the road and stuff.
Right.
They were there. I saw them in the suitcases, but he said he would never use them on me, and he never did. And he kept me away from the seedier side of Zeppelin, which was there. It was real. But I never got to see any of it firsthand.
But we romanticize things as we move forward in time. We forget about certain aspects of personalities and characters and the way things are.
I don't know. He treated me like a princess, and he kept telling me he was going to, you know, get the chariot and take me away in it. I mean, he was a very romantic guy.
And musically, was he the most gifted you think you've ever been
with? Keith Moon, maybe too. Keith Moon was... I think Keith Moon invented the frontman drummer. I mean, before Keith, they were way back in the back and very few people weren't paid much attention to. And he kind of created the rock god drummer, and deservedly so. I mean, he was
before
amazing.
That they weren't even on risers; they were just right there on the stage.
And he insisted on being seen right in the middle.
Right.
And he
didn't really play the drums like a typical drummer did either. He was
no.
integral to the sound. Of the
Yes.
There was never like just a 4/4 beat. He was all over the kit.
He
really
created.
Adding
he created so much. Although it's funny because Mitch Mitchell actually was my favorite rock drummer because how he could keep up with Hendrix. And not only keep up with him, I think he inspired him. I think he, some of the stuff he did was so jazzy, but it was still hard, you know. He was just about he was my favorite rock drummer. Did you like him too?
Mitchell, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. He was a...
Serious.
Killer. But Noel was my boyfriend in that band.
Ah.
He was a great bass player too. Anybody keep up with Hendrix?
Yeah, now...
He died last year. I've had a lot of my foes die.
Yeah, I met Noel in the 80s. And I was just so knocked out by how even he was about that whole experience. It was just like part of his life and no big deal. And, you know, he lived
and breathed. He was a little bitter about it.
Was he? Yeah, I guess he would be. Some of the guys that get passed by and, you know, maybe the publishing.
Well, he signed his whole thing away for, I think it was something like $35,000. Huh. You know, and he fought the rest of his life trying to get more money. Which he deserved. Somebody said should have said, well, come on. This guy made a mistake here. Let's give him some dough.
Exactly.
You know, it's so rude.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes the ship gets righted, but oftentimes it doesn't.
Yeah, it does. So he died not a happy man. His mother had just died, and they were very close.
Oh, boy.
Lived right near each other in Clonakilty. His girlfriend had just gotten cancer, and she was in a rehab, you know, facility.
Oh,
luckily, I got to see him, though, right before he died, and I got to really embrace him and be with him.
Give him some energy.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. Who was the most difficult relationship?
Jimmy Page.
And only because he was on the road. And
he was gone, and I was always worried he was with other girls, which, of course, he was. And, you know, he would tell me he wasn't. In fact, I was, you know, reading this stuff recently, and I haven't read the book in a long time, but reading it out loud again. Actually, Sandra Bernhard read the Zeppelin stuff the other night, and it just cracked me up to hear it. You know, he told me that when he was out on the road and would bring girls back to the hotel, it disgusted him, and he had to send them away. Yeah, right. I believed it. I was like, oh, God, he loves me.
Yeah, but in those days, though, Pamela, with everything being, you know, so free and easy, so to speak, so cliched, you know, there's this communal kind of lifestyle and experience. Was that made a little bit more palatable for you or not?
I was a diehard romantic.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I love the world. I love being
sure.
in it. I love
But you wanted your man for yourself.
With Beefheart and Zappa, and I had a lot of friends, guys, bands. I loved to be around them, but I did not cheat on my rock boyfriends.
Right.
In fact, Mick Jagger had to beg me to get in the sack with him.
Really?
And it took him a long time to get me in the sack. And the only way it happened was because I heard Jimmy was out fucking around on me.
Ah, so it was a tit for tat.
And Mick said, you think he's being true to you? I said, yes. He said, he said, you are, I remember. He said, you are in the GTOs, remember. You're not some schoolgirl from Idaho.
That's he said that to you?
Yes. He wanted me in the sack bad.
Aren't men manipulative?
But that night, I didn't go for it either. It was later I found out Jimmy had, actually, I think he'd maybe met Charlotte, the girl he wound up having his first child with.
Right. Right.
And he was actually very kind to me about the breakup.
He was.
He called and said, I have something I have to talk to you about. Of course, I'd already heard it through the groupie grapevine.
Yeah.
But he brought me into the hotel and very gently and sweetly told me about meeting this girl who was the love of his life, which was short term, but at the time,
right.
He felt that way. So I felt pretty good about that. But then I could go and to Mick, who was still in town, luckily, and, you know, say, yeah, okay.
So now I'm ready to cha-cha-cha.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had a great time. I saw him here several times and in London several times when I moved there.
And how about Jimmy today? Does he have regrets for maybe missing the paramour of his life, messing that up? You think he ever had any regrets for him?
He likes younger women.
And it was just...
He just kept going younger and younger. And his wife, girlfriend, I think they're married now, is maybe, 30 years younger? Which I should... I mean, hey, my boyfriend's 20 years younger. So.
Well, it's all right for a woman, you know. You know what the French say about the men, half your age plus seven is the average means of your woman? That's what the French say.
I think that's really wonderful, you know. And, yeah. You know, I'm leading some sort of
You've got the opposite. You've got the converse
for
women.
It's important to...
Half your age plus
important.
Seven for women.
Yes.
Yeah. Why not?
It's important. No,
well, they say a man doesn't reach his maturity emotionally until he's 40.
Really?
So you can throw the sensitivity factor in there.
It works for me.
Okay. I like the Groupie Grapevine concept. That's a good TV show idea. Groupie Grapevine, or movie concept. Groupie Grapevine.
Well, there was a Groupie Grapevine. There was. I called it the Tom Toms. Tom Toms, you could hear them.
Right. So you were here and they were
no
there.
There was no internet. There was no phone machines. There was no email. There was nothing.
Right.
So you had to hear it in the air. Right. And you did. All the groupies in the West Side and West Coast knew the groupies in the East Coast. We knew the London groupies. We knew the San Francisco groupies, you know, and we all knew who each other were.
Was there catfighting amongst that group? Was there like, he's mine, take your eyes off of him?
I didn't get involved in it, but yeah, that was going on. It
right.
was going on for sure.
And again, because you were so monogamous in your situations, you were kind of dip. I think what I'm trying to paint here is people can read anything they want to read into a situation without knowing the truth. They don't walk away with the truth.
Well, they need
really
to read
know.
The book. The
yes.
book. The book really does. I'm with the band. Does describe the fact that I was monogamous when I was in love with these people, but there was a lot of fun I had too. I certainly wasn't like involved in a we were romantic, but I wasn't in a relationship with Mick or Keith Moon or some of the people, Waylon Jennings. Some of them I was just having a blast with, you know. But it wasn't ever. I never had a one night stand. They always saw me again.
You heard it here.
With Waylon, he was out of my element.
In what sense?
Well, Graham Parsons turned me on to Merle, George, Waylon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Country music. I wasn't even interested in country music until I just thought it was corny old crap, but he sat me down with a little record player and said, you've got to listen to this, you've got to hear this, you know.
Right.
George Jones was his hero, but
right.
he turned me on to Waylon and invited Mercy and I down to Palomino to see Waylon, and I, yeah, I totally got that. And the next time he played, I went in my underwear. You know, I used to wear my underwear out.
Really?
Like, wait, okay, how many decades before Madonna?
Right.
And, you know, just
one decade before
garter. Yeah, it was one decade, yeah. actually. It was garter belts, you know, stockings, and all out. And I sat right in front of the Palomino and threw flowers at his feet. He'd never seen anything like it.
Well, that's L.A. style, isn't it?
Well, not for country music. No.
He'd never the Palomino seen. Was a different kind of venue, though, too,
yeah,
wasn't it?
But they had straight country music, too.
Yeah.
The Burritos played there, but they had straight country music. So I met him afterwards, and he invited me down to see him record, which happened a lot. I got invited to the studio. And I was willing for that to be a one-night stand because it was so out of my element. I just didn't know how we'd connect or anything, but I was so hot for him.
Right.
That was when he had the quiff, Waylon guitar.
Yeah, that was early.
Black wristbands. He was tough.
He was a tough guy.
So, but he turned out to be a softie, and I saw him like for 2.5 years whenever he'd come to L.A.
Right.
And he was married, and I didn't know it. I didn't ever go for the married thing, but he was married. By the time I found out, we were already entrenched, you know.
Right.
Still felt bad about it. But I met Shooter not too long ago, his son.
Shooter
was
James.
So
He's
hot,
great.
Too.
Yeah, love
such,
Shooter.
Such a great musician. Anyway, when I finally met him, he had a rock band in L.A. called Stargun. They were fantastic. And he said that he always thought of me as a long-lost weird aunt, which made me feel so fabulous. That Waylon told him about me even, that he even knew about me, you know. I guess the book caused a ruckus in that household, but...
A few households, maybe.
Good!
But you got to get your comeuppance, right? Some of these guys weren't exactly...
No, they were all great to me.
Yeah.
You know, they broke up with me and stuff, but, you know, that happens to everybody.
Right. And as you said, no one ever sued you over the book.
No.
Can't sue anyone over the truth.
Right, exactly. So he also said that when 2 weeks before his dad passed on, he was talking about me. He was telling Shooter about me. And Jesse Coulter, his wife, was in the other room and heard him doing that. And he said, Shooter, she yelled out, Waylon! Like, shut up, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
But I'm sure by then it was,
yeah.
you know, okay with, you know what I mean? I think she was just being amusing, I hope. Because, God... I've been in her presence several times because, you know, I go see Shooter play a lot and she sings backups. But I always try to stay out of her way. I don't want to ever, like, you know, I admire and I respect her. And that was naughty what I did.
Right. Did Waylon write any songs about you that you know? Or
I don't know if anyone's written songs about me. The ones I know about, Chris Hillman wrote one for me called The One That Got Away.
Mm.
I know that. On the... Second Desert Rose album. It's really great.
You know, people always gravitate towards the musician, towards the actor in our culture. What is it about that aspect of our subculture that is so freeing for someone's passion and their soul? Is it the boring life that they may have?
Possibly. But that wasn't for me, though. I wasn't having a boring life. I just wanted to be near the God inside that person, the creative soul of that person. I wanted to touch it. I wanted to feel it. I wanted to be where that, and, you know, and I was inspired by them.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, I would want to be as creative, and that's still the same way. You know, when I see a good show or hear, you know, or a good performance of any kind, I just, it does something to
just
you.
Just resonates with
you. Yeah, and you want to go do something creative yourself, and
right.
I think that's why.
Right.
I think most people obviously have that desire. And that inspiration, whether they go out and use it or not, that's where I think it stems from, because they want that too.
And now today, everything is so hyper-reality, the shows. It's like we see every minute detail of someone's life on MTV or,
the
rock
the
star
and
behind
all
this.
That.
And there's nothing left anymore. There's no veils left anymore for human beings at a certain level. It's very hard for an artist to be guarded and to have a private life today.
It is, but, you know, people manage it. They're big superstars manage it, like Bruce Springsteen and Prince. They both manage it.
Yeah, good point.
You can do it. It can be done, you know, but it's harder.
Yeah. And today, the way the industry is set up with the labels and everything, I don't know if there's the tolerance to develop those kind of nurtured souls you're talking about.
Oh,
they're
no.
really creative.
No, there's not. It's amazing, and any of them get through. Ryan Adams has gotten through. I think Ryan is a brilliant artist, and somebody reminds me of Graham, somebody from back then who is just so soulful.
A free spirit.
And he's getting through. His label is behind him. So
he's such an anomaly almost, though, in our industry.
Yeah.
The rest of them have to be like indie status, and then they get co-opted by a bigger brand. Like, you know, David Bowie will give a band like Arcade Fire his blessing and perform live with him in an event. And then suddenly everyone will clamor because they say, well, David's kind of given him...
Mm-hmm.
Given,
that's really nice when that happens.
Yeah, it's fantastic that artists would share
But then they're dumped.
And then they get dumped, they don't sell a million units. Not even half a million anymore. It's a million.
It's just so sad.
Yeah. It really is.
But there are scenes out there. There are scenes all
around. Well, rap
around.
Music. Let's talk about rap.
I don't know enough about rap to really...
But rap is like a musical renaissance onto its own form.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like if you say, okay, rock and roll had its golden moment, maybe rap has reached the zenith of its renaissance.
Yeah, I think it's a little past its...
Or a little past it.
I think it's a little past it, yeah.
Now, are there any rappers that, you know...
Eminem. Oh,
Eminem.
My God. If
he
I was
has
a groupie
zeitgeist.
Now, oh, please. I would have moved to Detroit if I was a young groupie now.
Because he got the white
especially
stripes.
When he wasn't, you know, he had a while there when he was separated from
right.
his wife.
Okay.
I would have said, okay.
I'm right going in there.
Because he says stuff, you know. He reveals
look how excited
himself.
You get when...
Oh, God. He reveals himself. And that's what it is about any artist. You know?
But he's different than a typical, the bravado that we get with a lot of rap music.
He opens his heart in his music. He says exactly what's in his heart and mind and soul. And he just puts it, just lays it out there like any great artist does. A lot of the rap stuff is just bullshit. They're
right.
just pissed off and
misogyny
angry.
And
hate it.
Yeah.
But he is awesome. Kanye is cool too.
Kanye's a new breed.
Yeah. And it stems, I think, from Eminem saying those things, you know, being that brave
right.
to just say it.
Do you think that there are any new bands out there that you really feel are groupie worthy? Have you heard any ones that you've mentioned? Or there's like, is there a scene?
There's a scene around every band. There's a little scene around every band. Most girls can't get past any of that stuff. But that choosing, the roadies still choose the girls.
Right.
That still goes on.
Right.
And they bring them backstage. The unfortunately, the favors for the roadies are still going on. You know, and it seems to me that it's pretty sincere. I mean, if a girl will actually give the favor to the roadie, they actually do get backstage.
Right.
But then they have to take it from there. They have to make, you know, they have to catch the eye of the person they're interested in. Or, I mean,
it's a little bit more dangerous, though, today with AIDS and
it's very dangerous.
Drugs and, you know, everything is very high-stakes poker today.
It is. It used to be just so, it was sublime. You didn't have to worry about any of it.
You'd experiment with a drug that you knew wouldn't probably kill you.
Right. Right.
Today,
right.
it's like you take one toke or hit of something, it could potentially
kill you.
Oh, it's
so scary. Yeah, you just can't do that. And also AIDS and all the other weird things that we didn't have back then. In fact, a rock star never gave me, you know, the clap or anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a very truthful moment. Thank you for sharing that, Pamela.
Well, people think, you know, people think
a lot of mothers
are dirty girls. We're not dirty girls.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's good to know. That means the rock and rollers are taking care of themselves, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are there any bands that you think, and I always ask this to people, who will be the next U2 or the Red Hot Chili Peppers? Who has that kind of longevity on that grand scale? I mean, especially U2. I mean, they're the biggest band in the world. They've been at it for
they're
20
great.
Years.
They're
now.
Great. He's a very important guy. But my taste is not mainstream at all.
Right.
So I like alt country stuff. I love the old 97s. I think they should be huge.
Right.
Rhett Miller, the singer, has some solo records.
He lives upstate New York.
I know. Yeah. He's a very good friend of mine. He read for me in Brooklyn. I love him. I love
his
work.
Did he really?
He read the Doors stuff for me in Brooklyn the other night. So I love them, the old 97s and Rhett. Ryan, love him. Lucinda Williams might be my favorite artist.
Yeah, but Lucinda, now let's be, who's the next Lucinda? Because Lucinda's 50 now. I mean,
she can.
No,
go
I'm not
forever.
Saying that you can't keep going on. You know, and great R&B, great music, you should be able to play until
please.
Your last dying breath.
Who's the new Lucinda? I don't know.
You know,
God, I don't think
is Fiona Apple the next female songwriter with legs?
She's fine. I just don't get the whole She's certainly not Lucinda.
There's no Joni Mitchell. Is there a young Joni? Cat Power is another band that gets banded. You know, she gets...
She's an amazing singer. Yeah. I can't quite tell what she's saying, though, so it's frustrating.
Yeah.
I like to know what they're saying.
So again, it's like you look at an artist and you say, this artist will create a body of work that will be evergreen.
Oh, you know what? I like the Wallflowers.
The Wallflowers, okay.
I love Jacob.
Jacob Dylan.
Jacob is now going solo.
Is he?
We saw him do a solo thing the other night, and it was like... His words, and not to mention how cute he is, thank you, were so great. Love listening to him.
But again, he's not a 20-year-old, and I'm always looking.
Yeah, I know. I can't think of any.
You know the Red Walls out of Illinois?
Cynthia Plastercaster loves them.
They're fantastic.
And she's got great taste, so I really trust her.
So there we go.
She's in their new video.
Is she?
Yeah.
Good for her. Because I fell in love with her album. I thought, they've got that kind of bravado, self-confidence that the old... They sound like the early Faces do.
Yeah.
I
liked them. And the fact that they liked her and wanted her in their video,
cool.
Hey, that's so great.
They didn't use the typical porn star. And
exactly. In fact, they used someone who, you know, Cynthia's been around a long time. And very important girl.
All right, so there we go. Why is it that so many rock and roll books and criticisms are written by men? Is it just because it's that network, the old boys' network? I mean, you're one of the few that's really written a book from a female perspective.
Well, most of the rock books by men are written by men who are looking from the outside in, wishing they were in the inside. And I think that's why they do it. They want to be in there, and they wish they had been there, and they're not, you know.
And you were inside looking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to speak.
So to speak.
Double entendre intended. Okay. We'll leave it at that. Are you blushing? Did I get you to blush? No.
Nah.
What are you passionate about, besides your love of music and your love of life, which is so apparent?
I just want to be here now. All I care about now is being in the moment, because really it's all we have. And my focus now is now, really. So the past is great. The past was fun. Who the knows what's going to happen in the next 3 seconds? So I just try to live right this second and love it. You know, that's really it.
And on cue? Yeah. Oh, that killed my moment.
But I love a lot of movies. I still get moved by great art. You know, I'm a Walt Whitman fanatic.
I was going to ask you who your favorite authors are.
Walt Whitman, I live by his words. You know, he actually appeared to me in a hologram one time.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Walt and I, we must go way back, many lifetimes. He actually shows up. Yeah, I hear from Walt, you know. But no, I love any great art. I love to read. I'm a voracious reader. I love Stephen King. Love him. I had a big crush on him. If he hadn't been married, I would have gone after him.
He's a big rock and roll freak, too.
Love it.
You know, he always
I went to see Rock Bottom Remainders.
Right.
I actually met him, and his wife was there, right? And I'd been sending him letters. I sent him my books. You know, I love him.
Right.
Whenever I love someone, I try to contact them somehow.
Right.
And I'd been sending him books, and I knew he'd gotten them. And the one night I finally met him, I said, Wow, how great to meet you, Stephen King. This is so great. And he said, hi, Pam. And he pulled, Tabitha, hey, this is Pam DeBar. It's Tabitha.
Oh, you hit a chord with him.
Oh.
You struck him deep.
Yeah, you know,
and
you know,
when
they dragged their wife in. Yeah. And he called me Pam. The only two people I allowed to call me Pam was him and Bob Dylan. You don't correct Bob Dylan, okay? You just don't do it. Sorry.
Well, let's talk about Bob Dylan. Do you mind if we go on that tangent? Because so enigmatic.
Bob
so many layers, and I don't think we've ever really seen the real Bob Dylan, ever.
Bob is the Whitman, the Blake of today. Bob is the Shakespeare of today. He's going to be revered in that way for eternity, in my opinion. And I think the recent Scorsese
is
close as we're going to get to seeing who Bob is, I think.
Yeah, and again, there's so many layers. Having read Chronicles, I just wonder, it's like you
so
can...
So great, isn't it?
Yeah, you can infer whatever you'd like about me, but you still don't know who I am. I've been maintaining my privacy.
Yes, being the biggest idol, you know, ever from that era.
Right.
Still, we don't know who he is. And there's how many books about him? 170 or something? Yeah.
What was he like with you?
Well, I've only spent an hour with him here and a half hour there, you know, and it was so hard for me sometimes until I get to know someone... It's hard for me not to put aside the fact that I lived for every word he spoke for so long. But, you know, we interacted. He asked me to write a screenplay with him. I went to his 50th birthday party, and he called me took my phone and actually called me up. And I was not home. And he never called again. So, he's it. Bob Dylan is just it. Bob Dylan told me I was a good writer.
I wouldn't
that hear. That was like the moment, you know, that people wait for all their lives. That was it.
It was really fun.
Pam! He held his arms out like this. Mm-hmm. Backstage, I said, Pam, I read your book and you're a good writer. Okay, that's it.
Now, wait,
I
if
can
you hooked
die
up,
now.
If you hooked up with him, would you make him call you Pamela, though, or would you let it
Yes. I would. Of course, I'm in love right now.
That's true. We don't want to ruin that. Mm-mm. We don't want to ruin a good thing for you.
I'm really in love.
But that's all right. You're in good music. You can live vicariously through the records. And...
Oh, yeah. Well, I would like to just know Bob. Yeah. You know, I'd just like to be friends with Bob. I really would. I've tried to find and meet him. Ever since then, I just knew we'd... He called me up, for God's sake. He must have wanted to say something to me.
How would you like to be remembered?
As a sexual pioneer and a brilliant writer.
And well, you already have one fan, Bob, so nothing else matters, really. I mean, come on.
I don't know. I would like to open people up. I want to help. I want to open people up. You know, sex is just such an exquisite way to share yourself with someone, you know, and people are still so uptight about it, especially in America. It should be just a much freer expression.
Right.
You know, I want to get t-shirts that say Sexual Pioneer. I'm going to have her make me some of those up.
Sexual Pioneer? I like that.
And get pictures of different sexual pioneers like Aeneas Nin and Walt Whitman, who, you know, people who dared to try to break through that absolute bullshit.
Yeah, why do you think it's... And we're such a violent society, and we co-opt violence everywhere, but God forbid you show a nipple on the Super Bowl.
Oh, I know.
And you know that they bleeped... Mick the other
night
we said
cops. I know.
And I'm like, come on, what is that?
Well, my new version of I'm With Men just came out. I was naked in it. And in America, they covered the nipple up with flowers, but not in England. In England, the nipple shows.
Well, they have breasts in TV commercials.
Yes,
so
I know.
Cares?
And on the Page Three,
you
girls.
Go to Italy, they have variety shows where the whole thing is to be naked in the show.
And come on. Anyway.
Well, they had 3,000 years to get it right, those civilizations.
Yes, that's true. Countries. People are so uptight here about sex. So I would like to be known as a sexual pioneer and a happy person who lived right now in the moment.
You had a scare with breast cancer, and you were very brave to share that with the world.
Well, that's another thing, you know. I'm not a big, huge public persona, but when you have the opportunity, when you are someone that someone might listen to, you know, I wanted to share my experience because I had a different type of experience. I wanted to, you know, I did some alternative things. I did the medical route because you don't want to fuck around with cancer.
Right.
So, I did that, but I also did all kinds of alternative things.
Holistic medicine.
Yeah, holistic. I went and got a cleanse, you know. I went to this place called the Optima Health Institute and did a wheatgrass cleanse to help get the radiation out of me. And
right.
I also did all these guided visualization to get me through the surgery and everything easier. It was so much easier and better if you feel like you have some type of control. And that's
right.
And I wrote about it on dishmag.com.
Okay.
You can go to dishmag.com and click on health and all my... I have an online journal about it.
Terrific.
But I beat it. I mean, as far as we know, it's gone, you know.
Good. God bless. So what's in store next? The new book, Let's Spend the
Night
Together?
Yeah, I'm writing a groupie memoir of other groupie stories, starting with Tura Sutana, who was with Elvis. She was also
an actress. She was in Faster Pussycat Kill,
an actress, right. A stripper. And then I'm going through to the girls now, the most recent girls I've met who are after the guys now. It's going on.
I forgot a band. I forgot a band. Maybe these. Have you talked to any of the Radiohead groupies? Because they're such an interesting band.
They're an intellectual band.
Yeah, they're too
intellectualized. They're brainy girls who probably don't want to go after the guys. I wouldn't think. I wouldn't think. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we.
Yeah, I gotta get going.
Got it.
That was fun.
Dusty Wright with Pamela DeBar. We're at the Cook Shop in New York City. Thanks for being on the Culture Catch.
Thank you.
I want to thank our sponsors today, WebHSP. For all of your web hosting needs, it's webhsp.com, and our friends at Final Draft. If you're writing a script, you need their software. Check out finaldraft.com. And don't forget to check us out online at culturecatch.com. We got plenty of fresh reviews up daily. Till next time, converge is the word. I'm out of here.